You're listening to highlights from the Creative Processes interview with journalist Jacob Ward, author of the book, The Loop, How AI is Creating a World Without Choices and How to Fight Back. This podcast is supported by the Jan Michalski Foundation.
Civilization is a very new and very glitchy thing. It's a big experiment. And if you talk to evolutionary psychologists and people who've looked at how our brains have developed over hundreds of thousands, if not millions of years, they'll tell you that our sense of wonder and creativity and our ability to be cautious and rational and trust people we've never met to govern us and all of that kind of stuff, the vast majority of our decision-making actually rests on a much older, much more ancient system. We are so much more like primates than we like to think, certainly. That's been the lesson of the last sort of 50 years of behavioral science. I was trying to sort of marry a lot of research looking at the ways in which people are trying to build interesting technologies, but then deploy them to make money, and how tempting it is to throw those technologies at those ancient decision-making systems, especially because so much of our decision-making is instinctive. So you mentioned social media. There's been no greater sort of hack of our most ancient primitive systems than that. You can't help but look at the car accident as you go past it. And we now have a whole industry built on that idea. My worry with AI, of course, is that as we automate decision-making more and more, we use automated systems not only to entertain ourselves, but to decide who gets a job and who gets a loan and who gets bail. I worry that we're going to be in a position in 20 years where we don't have the internal compass we once did. We maybe have slid away from that higher human functioning, the creativity and the rationality and all that stuff, and back toward a more primitive version of ourselves, because that's the part that gets played on by this kind of technology. And that's how all these companies wind up making money. A lot of what I argued for in my book and have come to believe about what we're going to need to do in terms of regulating on the basis of the mental effects, the psychological effects of the weird part is that I'll go speak to people and they'll bring up China, which really does that, right? They really do regulate on the basis of the worries they have about the effect that technology might have on the mind. So they do things that I look at and think, oh, that would be cool. So for instance, it's widely understood now that kids in China do not use social media like kids in the United States. Kids under a certain age are not even allowed by law to be scrolling something like our TikTok. That is not okay by the government. And I, as a worried parent of teenagers, I think to myself, that'd be great. I wish that were true here. I also know that they also have what I consider to be really positive ideas about making sure that these companies are transparent about the algorithms they use and how those algorithms function. On the other hand, one of the requirements around the transparency is that they show that the company has built an algorithm that is based on party doctrine, that agrees with the Central Communist Party's. I'm caught between, like, I want regulation, because right now in the United States, there's no data privacy laws, there's no regulation whatsoever. So I definitely want something. But do I want a random four-year executive making those choices? Do I want it to be as top-down a system of control as China has implemented? I don't think so. But there's something in between no rules, which is what we currently are living in, and the rules that are out there in the world. There's this idea that somehow AI is going to do all the dishes for you so that you can relax and paint in your garden. But one thing that I come back to all the time is this idea called the Jevons paradox. So William Jevons was a 19th century British economist. He was trying to figure out on the part of the British Empire, why are we running out of coal? Because it was a huge problem. And he was saying, you know, boy, if we run out of coal, then this empire is going to collapse. And so we have to figure this out. And one of the things he was trying to determine was, why are we running out of coal at a time when we are using coal more efficiently than ever? There had been this new invention in terms of steam engines that had really, you know, was using coal so much more efficiently, and yet they're blowing through it at this higher rate. Well, ever since, the Jevons paradox has become the name for when we use a thing more efficiently, we don't use less of it, we use more of it. It's true in water. The more reservoirs you build to hold drinking water, it turns out the more water we consume. And I would argue it's true of labor-saving technology. So with technology like AI, this illusion that we're going to somehow work less because this thing enables us to work more and more efficiently. I think that instead we're going to burn through people's time even faster. You're already seeing companies lay people off because they say, we just don't need this number of people. That means that the people who remain are being expected to do all those fired people's work. I just think that's going to be true in the creative industries. I think it's going to be true in the professional world, just as it's been true with water and coal and everything else. The tradition of software, making software, is you release it into the wild. The more people use it, the better it gets, because that's more and more people catching the bugs and the glitches, and you then fix them as you go. And so scale, in theory, solves your problem with software. And the people making the AI systems, they all come from that world. They don't come from the hardware world, where if you go to scale with a product that causes damage or is problematic, your problems only get worse the more people you sell that thing to. You know, a car that blows up sold on a grand scale is vastly worse than selling just a couple of them. So I look at this and I think, you know, these are companies that are experimenting in the wild, and they created these systems that can generate huge amounts of content without releasing a detector for that content. So they're flooding the system, polluting our information ecosystem with this slop, this made-up stuff, this hallucinated text and AI-generated whatever, without giving us the tools we would need to know what was written by a human and what was not. And I think that's another one of the huge problems, is that not only do they not really know how these things are making decisions moment to moment, they have no ability to even detect their creations out in the world. And so the combination of those things is a real problem that I think is explained by this sort of software attitude that, like, we'll fix it later. Let's get to scale. That's what's going to solve our problems. It is not clear to me how this is going to happen. But the American ideal has always been this fantasy, this myth, that each of us is our own individual, and that we should love the idea that an individual makes it big on her or his own just by going with our gut and pulling ourselves up by our bootstraps, right? We don't like the idea that it takes a village to raise a child. We don't like the idea that you need the support of everyone around you. And we really don't like the idea that you should actually pay attention to the data in making a decision about your future. We love the Han Solo kind of character who says, don't tell me the odds, I'm going to fly through this asteroid field. You know, and the movie always, that guy always survives somehow in the movie. Whereas in the real world, that guy is going to get smashed to pieces every time in the asteroid field. And to my mind, the way that we as a society think about our vulnerability to, we don't like to think about our vulnerability to things like addiction or manipulation or the loss of agency over time. I don't think we look as clearly as we need to at the vulnerabilities of our brains. And I think that one of the things we're going to have to shift in this country, and I think the courts are going to have to do this for us, is away from the idea that everybody is in charge of themselves and responsible for themselves, and toward the idea that there are some big companies employing very, very smart people who are learning to tweak your behavior to suit their purposes. It was true in cigarettes, it's true in alcohol, it's true in gambling, and I think increasingly it's going to be true in technology. The problem that we're facing, right, is that the entry-level and just above entry-level jobs at big companies are going away as AI is, rightly or wrongly, assumed to be able to do that kind of work. So then what happens to a new college kid who's just come out of university? Well, is that kid somehow supposed to already be qualified for that third level job, you know, that third promotion already, where your job skills are already somehow learned, those basic knowledge work kind of jobs that a research assistant or a clerical worker would have picked up? If you've got a whole generation of 21-year-olds suddenly unable to find that entry-level work and being expected to have that third job level of experience, well, there's going to have to be some kind of apprenticeship notion that is going to get kids from here to there, where you are at the very least, shadowing somebody in that third level job and learning over the course of a few years those job functions while AI does all the entry level work. Because we're going to have more people, literal humans, walking around needing work than ever before. And those people are going to be of voting age. So that's the other part. Some candidate is going to come along and say, I'm going to get everybody back to work, and here's how I'm going to do it through this national apprenticeship program. I feel like that's the kind of platform that in a generation could like really make a political movement. I think people like Andrew Yang were sort of too early with thinking about universal basic income and these things. I think he was right, but he was too early. Now, I think once we get into the crisis of entry-level work, I think there's going to be a real political opportunity for somebody. I started worrying about this in 2019. There was a paper that came out, or an article that came out in MIT Technology Review by a guy named Sean Dorrance Kelly. He made the argument that AI can't create art, but it is impossible for true creativity to lie inside AI. And he goes on and on about the sort of the philosophical basis of how true creativity, as we understand it academically, has to come out of humans. I remember reading that and thinking, as well-reasoned as this argument was, I was just like, this guy's missing the point, because it's not going to matter what our academic definition of creativity is when millions of people every day, when the market generally embraces automated art in a huge and transformative fashion. Because fundamentally, what's going to make art possible is whether people engage in it. And people have already shown that they're going to be very happy to go ahead and engage with something slapped together by AI in a few milliseconds. There are places where I look at it and I think it's funny and diverting. It's an AI-generated song that gives you technical instructions on how to steal an F-16 fighter jet. How do I steal an F-16? And then there's this great chorus. It's catchy as hell. It's hilarious as a concept. It makes me laugh every time. And I think to myself, Sean Dorrance Kelly, sorry, buddy, the ship sailed the second it became available to people. We're seeing the effects of people's conformity. We're seeing people's personal presentation obey a certain conformity based on technology. So I was just in Portugal on a trip recently. And whenever I travel abroad, I'm always so excited to see what the kids are wearing. I just want to see like what's youth fashion doing in that place. I went there and those kids were dressed exactly like my kids. It was the same outfits exactly. And I realized, oh, this is the TikTok effect. This is people watching the same fashions go around and around and around and is creating this kind of culture of conformity. So between these two things, this mass marketing of a look or a thing or an aesthetic or whatever it is, it's because there are these norms being pushed. And I worry about it. Like, some people have tried to argue in court that AI can create an original work and should be given like the copyright for that work. And I'm curious what you think about it. Do you think that these systems, which can absolutely mimic something like music incredibly easily, that's no problem. Music's one of the easiest things for AI to generate. What do you think about that? Can we consider AI the author of a thing? There's an incredible cookbook by the personal chef to Georgia O'Keeffe. This guy describes all of these different conversations that he would see O'Keeffe have with her dinner guests. And one conversation, she had a whole table full of young artists, and they were all talking about the key to happiness. Oh, I'm happiest when this happens, and how do you sustain happiness, and blah, 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 blah. And O'Keeffe was sitting at the head of the table just sort of quietly listening to everybody talk. And then she finally cuts in and she says, happiness is a very fleeting thing and you cannot have it in your life in a sustainable way. She said, I have found that the only thing that is truly sustainable in the long term is interest. That's the only thing you can guarantee you can keep going for a long period of time is interest. And that's a thing that I feel like I'm in the midst right now of talking to my teenager a great deal about this, because the desire is for dopamine, right? The desire is for happiness in that sort of quick hit way. But that feeling is fleeting. That's how our brain chemistry works. It's not designed to be anything more than a momentary reward. But that intellectual satisfaction of the curiosity and the yearning and the seeking and the learning that comes with interest, that really can go a long way. It's not as immediately rewarding, but it is way more rewarding in the long term. So that's the first thing I would say, is we need to be focused not on how quickly can I get ChatGPT to summarize this book, but reading the book so that you're interested by it, or so that you know whether you are interested by it. Find what you are interested by, because this is a world that's going to only try and convince you that happiness is what counts and interest is what really counts. So that's one thing I think about. And the other one is, I had an interview with an expert in friendships, a guy named David Jay, and he describes the difference between transactional relationships and the kind of ideal relationship. In a transactional relationship, like at a professional networking event, that's a relationship where you know what it's going to give you. Like, you can predict what the outcome of that relationship will be. A good relationship, the ideal relationship, is one where you don't know what's going to happen. The reason you go hang out with great friends is because you don't know what kind of trouble you're going to get into together. You don't know what is going to happen when you go on vacation together. And for me, that's the other thing. It's like, this is a world that really is going to want to corral your experiences into a very predictable set of expectations, because that's how marketers get you, right? And instead, keep being weird. Keep doing weird stuff that is unpredictable, because that both helps fend off a lot of these forces that are going to be coming at you, and that's a better kind of relationship with yourself and with the people around you.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to these highlights. To listen to the latest episodes or learn more about participating in exhibitions or interviews, click on subscribe. Thanks for listening.